is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious, shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight, we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Schoaf went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I was taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unacceptable, and the unedited.
That was fun. That's my favorite part of the show, I think. Johnny and Billy here, and we talk about weird stuff, UFOs. We talk about psychics and near-death and afterlife, ghosts, Sasquatch, Dogman, alien abduction, conspiracies. You know what a conspiracy I was thinking about today that I don't think we've talked about?
Which one is that?
That Hitler didn't commit suicide and he escaped along with a lot of the other Nazis.
Oh, yes.
Where did they go again?
They went to South America.
What do you think of that conspiracy that didn't happen and they were able to sneak on a U-boat or whatever, a submarine, and skedaddle down there?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there's a variety of documents that say that he committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also evidence, and I don't know how substantial it
Argentina.
Is. Argentina.
That's
that
what
he
it
escaped
was.
To Argentina.
A lot of Nazis did escape down to Argentina, and there's a lot of evidence that they're still there or their ancestors continue to live there, and that in the woods in Argentina, if you watch some of those, you know, Finding Hitler shows, there's like old stone houses and stuff with evidence.
Yeah, I haven't studied it in a long time, but it seems to me that there was quite a bit of evidence of Hitler escaping. But again, there was evidence that he committed suicide, too. So it's hard to know which one is true.
I heard they discovered him in his bunker. It's rumored that he used, like, his stand-ins, you know, people that look like Hitler, to sword off assassination attempts. But one of those guys was, like, the ones to actually, maybe he killed him and, you know, made it look like a suicide or whatever. But then they burned the bodies right then and there without really any pictures that I know of.
And that would destroy any DNA.
Right. And why would they burn them? Why wouldn't they take their bodies and do something with them first instead of just burning them right then and there?
Well, that's, I read a book a while back it touched on that subject.
Mm-hmm.
You know, destroying the bodies so that no one knew who they were.
Right.
You know, and of course then writing documents that said, you know, we found Adolf Hitler and we killed him. It's kind of like the Osama bin Laden thing, you know. We were told that he was captured. We were told that he died and was buried at sea.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we don't, I would imagine there are documents. There might even be pictures, but we haven't really seen any of that.
So in the case of Hitler and bin Laden, we have to go by people's words for it.
Right. We have to take people's words. You know, and the documents. Back in the 60s and 70s, we found old Nazis that were living in places like Maine and New Jersey, and even in the on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, escaped and come here and established a new life under a different identity. And it was only through DNA or other means that they found these people.
Mm-hmm.
So this happens. I mean, it does happen. It happens in war.
Should they be forgiven or no?
You know, I don't know. We as human beings are fallible, and we have to start accepting the fact that we're fallible. And there are certain things that are forgivable, and there are certain things that are not. Kids do things that are really stupid sometimes.
Yeah.
Because they don't think about what they're doing.
Right.
You know, it seems fun and interesting at the time, and they don't realize what the ramifications of those actions are. So I think we have to, in judging people that have done horrendous things like that, we have to look at the person. What have they done since then?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing now? And did they learn a lesson from that?
Mm-hmm.
There are people that do stupid things but never learn.
Right.
They just keep doing the same stupid thing over and over again. That kind of person, I don't think you can forgive them because they fail to learn.
Right.
And there are others who do stupid things.
Yeah, easy, easy.
Oh, I wish I hadn't done that, you know.
I'm sensitive.
I know. But all your stupid stuff is forgivable.
Oh, man. Gosh, I hope so. Boy, oh, boy. So is Hitler dead, or is he hiding out in Argentina? Well, he'd be dead by now, probably.
He'd probably be dead by now. He was, I don't know how old he was when they ended his term over there. But
when they ended his term.
It was, the end of World War II in the European theater.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was, people don't realize what the cost of that war was. You know, we talk about strange things here, but 60 million people died in the European theater
mm-hmm.
in World War II. 60 million.
That's a lot.
This is a tremendous amount
right.
of people. This is a tremendous number of human beings. And that was just the European theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't include the Pacific Theater and the African Theater. So this is bad stuff, war, and bad people do it, and sometimes those bad people get away with it. You know, they you know, the ones that perpetrated the wars move on and go somewhere else and start a new life.
Okay, other conspiracies. I know we kind of just accidentally rolled into this. D.B. Cooper.
D.B. Cooper, yes.
Now, apparently they found out who that is.
They say that. I mean, that's and there's some evidence that, I don't remember his name now, the name of the guy that they say was D.B. Cooper. That's a very strange case, because that was one that went unsolved for a very, very long time.
Right, until just recently.
Right. There were some discrepancies in the way that they came about identifying him. And there's some people that say, yeah, that was accurate, and some people that say it wasn't. You know, my belief is that he probably died when he jumped out of that plane.
Well, here is the most recent. It was a team of former FBI investigators who say that they have the real identity and the proof. Now, this happened in 1971 in November. He hijacked a plane and got $200,000 and parachuted out, and nobody could find him after that. They say the real Cooper is a 74-year-old Vietnam veteran named Robert Rackshaw, and the proof is hidden in a series of letters allegedly written by Cooper in the months after the hijacking and his disappearance. Rackstraw was a former Special Forces paratrooper, explosives expert, and pilot with about 22 different aliases, was once a person of interest in the case, but was eliminated as a suspect by the FBI in 79. Now, his elimination was controversial amongst the investigating agents, and he remained for many years the most viable suspect in what remains the only unsolved case of air piracy in the United States. Now, a few years back, the FBI announced that they were ending the investigation into the case. Quote, "This has been a cover-up. They're stonewalling," Colbert said. He believes that the FBI protected Rackstraw because he was involved in numerous classified units during the war, and he may have worked with the CIA. "This is an old-fashioned scandal," he said. For FBI Seattle field office said that they've received an immense number of tips over the years, but none to date have resulted in a definitive identification of the hijacker.
Other than the fact that he was involved in classified action.
And he had letters.
What? Yeah, what do they think he would do if he were arrested?
I don't know.
I mean, would anybody believe him if he talked? If he talked about these classified missions that he went on?
Rick Sherwood, a former member of the Army Security Agency, which decoded signals during the Vietnam War, cracked the codes. Rackstraw served under Sherwood with two classified units, and Sherwood was familiar with his writing style, having deciphered some of his earlier messages. When he saw the fifth and sixth typewritten letters, he immediately thought the odd letter and number combinations were indicative of the type of coded message that Rackstraw would send. Sherwood spent weeks working on the solution, which allegedly referred to three specialized Army units and just one soldier had served in. He was the only man in the whole American Army with those three units. And we know it's Robert Rackstraw. As far as Colbert was concerned, the case had already been closed. In February, he and his team briefly made headlines when they released Sherwood's analysis of the fifth letter and officially fingered Rackstraw as D.B. Cooper. But the sixth letter, sent to Portland's Oregonian newspaper in March of 72, turned out to be even more damning, the icing on the cake. "I read it two or three times and said, this is Rackstraw. This is what he does. I noticed he kept on repeating words in his sentences and thought that he had a code in there somewhere. He was taunting like he normally does, and I thought his name was going to be in it, and sure enough, the numbers added up perfectly." Now, the letter doesn't have any fingerprints or watermarks. The FBI were never able to confirm a genuine connection to the previous Cooper letters, which limits its value, which is a bummer because, according to Colbert and Sherwood, it contains a coded confession and the hijacker's real identity. Using codes that only Rackstraw would have known, Sherwood honed in on two sentences for analysis. The first sentence, "I want out of the system and saw a way through good old UNK," UNK, capitalize U, was decoded to "I want out of the system and saw a way by skyjacking a jet plane." And the second sentence, "Please tell the lackey cops D.B. Cooper is not my real name," was decoded to "I am First Lieutenant Robert Rackstraw. D.B. Cooper is not my real name." Apparently, there's decoded messages in the messages that, or the letters that he had sent.
Right.
If those were authentic.
If they were authentic.
Right. So.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes I think these conspiracies, of course, the longer they grow,
right,
the more things that people add in and begin to read into them. And so I think it's hard. It's really hard without some really hard evidence. There was a fictional story about a guy that found the some of the money that D.B. Cooper had dumped out of the airplane. And that was a fictional story, but. But it was an interesting theory, and he kind of tracked the money back and determined...
Wasn't some of it found in some areas?
Yeah, I don't remember all the details, but yeah, you know me, I have a hard time with conspiracies.
Right.
It's just, you know, they're so easy to create, and they're so easy to basically falsify. And so difficult to prove.
Okay, what about the Alcatraz escapees? Do you think they survived?
I think they got away.
Right?
I think they did. You know, a number of different groups, including the Mythbusters, which was always one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
Have proved that it could happen. And there's some that have demonstrated that it would be nearly impossible. But if everything was just right, that was pouring rain that night, it was in the middle of a storm, which makes it less likely, but it was doable. And if they had done their homework, and these were not, you know, old fat guys. These were physically fit guys who were in prison and well-nourished because they were well-fed in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a reason why they couldn't have done it. If their raft was sturdy enough to, you know, endure the storm and get across the bay, and if they followed the currents in the bay, they could have easily gotten to land. Now, it may not be where everybody thought they would be. It may be someplace further east or further south, or it might be someplace that people didn't quite think they would get to.
Now, apparently, a few years back, San Francisco Police Department, Richmond Station, they got a letter, and the letter said that he was the last living member of the trio, with his co-conspirators dying in 05 and 08, so he offered a deal. If authorities announced on TV that he would receive a single one-year jail sentence in which he could have medical treatment, because apparently, like, he'd gotten cancer.
Yeah.
So he wanted to do a deal. Okay, I'll do a year in jail time, but I get treatment while I'm in jail for the cancer that I have. And I'll let you know where I'm at if you agree to that, and case closed.
Isn't that a kind of a nice scam to pull to get medical care?
Yeah, I guess he'd have to give more proof, because anybody could just say, you could say that was you, right?
Sure. I could come up and claim that I was, right, you know, just about anybody. I think that I don't understand why these folks would come out on their deathbed, say these things. And so why didn't the other two guys come out on their deathbed and say that they were part of this? Or why didn't they write it down someplace?
It's my understanding that they made it to Brazil and started like a big grow operation, and they were just high in hog heaven and living a fine life, and they were writing greeting cards during Christmas and stuff to family members, supposedly.
Yeah.
But, you know, the family members had claimed this, you know, if you watch some of the TV shows. So they'd always kept in touch with the family. They were perfectly content living down there because they had money and they had a business and, you know, nobody was messing with them. At least that was the conspiracy.
Right. And one of the problems with the TV shows that address these conspiracies,
mm-hmm,
is they never come up with any kind of conclusive evidence.
Right.
Ever.
They keep you hanging on.
Ever.
Finding Bigfoot.
I have never seen one of these shows come up with conclusive evidence about anything. You know, it's the old Geraldo Rivera trick.
Right.
You know, you pop it up. You know, you get 14 different high-dollar sponsors, and what do you find? An empty room.
Right. You know, Al Capone's vault.
Al Capone's vault. And yet, no way to prove that it was Al Capone's vault. We have to remember there are just a lot of con artists and showmen.
Right.
And creating conspiracies is just a way to get attention, to make money. All these things that people do. I mean, sometimes we think that would not be very possible. But it is, and people do this stuff. You know, the average human being wouldn't do it because they have integrity and
conscience,
yeah, and that kind of thing. But there are a lot of people that don't have those things.
Right.
They don't care. All they want is fame and money and recognition.
Me, 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 my, yeah, my, now.
But speaking of conspiracies.
Uh-oh.
I've been watching the new series, Project Blue Book,
uh-huh,
on the History Channel.
Right.
Which is basically just a remake of the original Project Blue Book show from, I think it was the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's really good. They've done a good job of not over-exaggerating things, of keeping it plausible.
Mm-hmm.
So that the explanations, and then at the end of the show, they give some more explanations about the case. And I guess on their website, I haven't looked, that they give some in-depth explanations of each case.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all based on actual cases of UFO sightings. And, of course, it's dramatized for television.
Has a love story soap opera in there, too, maybe?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, a little bit, you know. But it's interesting. It's a good show. And, you know, if you're into strange stuff like we are, I think it's worth a watch. I don't know that you're going to learn anything about UFOs, but I think that a lot of the things they say are feasible, are possibly things that could have happened, you know, and we don't know for sure. But, and again, like most TV shows, there's never anything absolutely conclusive. And, of course, the private guy, the scientist, is trying to prove everything, and the government guy is trying to cover it all up. So,
right.
But it's worth a watch. I think it's worth a watch. I used to watch all those things on Sci-Fi and History Channel and the Science Channel. But I just got tired of the letdown endings, you know. The lack of any kind of conclusion, you know, or solid evidence. You know, there's a lot of supposing, and there's a lot of analyzing evidence, but not coming to any solid conclusions about it. So it's kind of like the Amelia Earhart thing. You know, every couple of years, we hear that somebody has discovered Amelia Earhart's plane, or they've discovered where she crashed, or they found that she's still alive, you know, or that she died in the crash, or that she lived for a while. I mean, there are so many stories out there, it's hard to believe anything.
Switching gears, Grant Cameron, UFO researcher, and apparently he is going to Skype in during the UFO Paranormal Summit to disclose it all. Actually, he's doing this through attorney Michael W. Hall, his disclosure trust, and he's getting all his ducks in an order.
It'll be interesting to see what this guy has and what his documentation is. And when is the UFO Summit, Johnny?
March 1st and 2nd.
So that's coming up in about 3 weeks.
Right. Right. I'm always getting nervous at about this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and coming up, we're going to talk about psychics.
Oh, my God.
Outing psychics.
Psychics.
Right. But you knew that.
I knew that.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and let's see. Oh, are you familiar with James, the Amazing Randy? James Randy?
James Randy, yes, I've heard of him.
He looks like a skinny Santa Claus, and he he likes to out those psychics who aren't really psychics, but claim they are.
Right.
Uri Geller was a real famous psychic, and Mr. Randy locked on him and started chasing him around, saying, okay, well, if you're such a psychic, let's do this under a controlled environment. Cost Mr. Geller quite a bit of money.
I would imagine it would, yeah.
Right. Here's a clip of the Amazing Randy.
Now, this isn't proof positive that other demonstrations aren't the result of supernatural power, but isn't this a more reasonable explanation? And then, of course, there was Mr. Geller's appearance on The Tonight Show. I got a call after they booked him to appear.
Would you welcome, please, Uri Geller.
Johnny had been a magician himself and was skeptical. I was asked to help prevent any trickery.
Nice to see you.
Thanks.
We have only met...
This scares me.
This scares you? Well, we just got some things together here. And
I told them to provide their own props and not to let Geller or his people anywhere near them.
Also, one of our staff members did some drawings which have been sealed in an envelope, and I'd like you to take your own pace when you feel like you want to try anything.
Right.
Do you want to try that particular experiment first?
When I'll feel free.
When you do? Sure.
We'll start eliminating the ones that do not have the water.
All right, without touching them.
He's trying to use his psychic abilities to detect which of the containers have water, right? And they're watching him.
He is really suspicious, you know. I'm having a hard time with you.
Look, I don't mean to be, all right? I really don't.
Just keep looking. Okay, let me rest a little, all right?
All right.
You know, I'm surprised because before this program, your producer came and he read me at least 40 questions you're going to ask me.
Well, I can ask you all kinds of questions if you'd like me to ask you questions.
I have to have time.
His people weren't allowed near any of the items, right?
Right.
And he's kind of nervously saying, God, I just don't feel right. You guys are all pressuring me, and, oh, I need to relax. And, you know, your producer asked me about 40 questions you were going to ask, and James Randi, if you watch the documentary that we have up on the website, he shows you how to do the spoon bending thing. He outs a lot of these common psychic tricks.
Right.
A guy like George Anderson, though, I think that's a whole different thing. You know.
Oh, absolutely.
He's not bending spoons. He's not trying to say, all right, I'm going to guess what you're thinking, anything like that.
Right. Yeah. One of the differences between a real psychic and a fake psychic is, number one, there aren't many real psychics, so there are a lot more fake ones. But the real guys, they make mistakes. They're not always 100% accurate. They have to ask questions. They have to try to understand from the messages they're getting how that applies to the person.
Right.
But the fake guys, they seem to have everything under control. They're much more accurate because they have information about the person that
right.
they're making a discussion. I went to I went to see Sylvia Brown. Saw her a couple of times. Even got to meet her once off stage. And one of the things about Sylvia Brown's presentations, and for those that don't know who Sylvia Brown is, she was a psychic. One of the things is a lot of times when you go see a psychic, you know, you have to fill out a little information card so that they actually have a little information about you. But when you go see Sylvia Brown, there's no information cards. In fact, her performances were, in the early days, extremely inexpensive to get into. You know, it was just a few bucks
right.
entry fee just to cover the cost of the room. And then she would walk through the room, and she would, sometimes she would touch people, sometimes she would just look at people. And in cases, many cases, what these psychics do is they have plants in the room. They're people that they've talked to,
mm-hmm.
you know, long before the event. And those people come in, and they're picked out of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. I was there with other people, and Sylvia Brown spoke to them and was very accurate in her evaluation of who they were and what was bothering them. I've seen other psychics who can do the same thing just by looking at people, by kind of reading what the person is doing. Now, I worked in the mental health field for many, many years. And one of the things that always helped me was look at a person, I could listen to them talk, even for a relatively short period of time, and get a strong sense of something that's gone on in this person's past. Now, I wasn't 100% correct. Sometimes I missed the mark. But most of the time, I was right on. And this is what psychics do as well. They read the energy. They read the body language. They read all these things that are coming from that person. It's not that they can read their thoughts entirely, but they have a sense of what that person is feeling and what that might relate to. And they also have this ability to take all this little bits and pieces of evidence that they're gathering just by looking at someone or listening to them and formulate a conclusion, formulate a theory about what's happening, and then by asking certain questions come to a conclusion.
I always thought she was kind of a quack until I think I introduced her at the DNR or something one of the times she was there. And
yeah.
I didn't ask her anything in public, I don't think. I don't remember that much. All I do remember is just thinking that, you know, she was a fake. And then when she did tell me something, she said, oh, yeah, you're going to move into a big house, a beautiful, big, beautiful house with a lot of windows. That was in the cards at the time. Where do I live, Bill?
You live in a big, beautiful house with lots of windows.
Right. And I think it occurred to me on this show, because we've talked about this before and talked about her before, just that I could say that to you, Bill, you're going to move into a place with a bunch of big windows. In 20 years, maybe you live in a house that happens to have windows. So it was either a crazy coincidence or not, right? It was either one or the other.
Right. And, you know, I mean, there's thoughts about this that, you know, that sometimes people put a thought into your head,
mm-hmm.
and then you pursue that. But usually what happens is when you get a thought in your head and you start to pursue it, and if it's not reasonable and rational, you abandon that pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to influence someone that way,
mm-hmm.
especially with, I mean, you could probably do it in a controlled setting where you told somebody the same thing over and over again.
Right.
But to say something to someone once and then to have that event happen.
She didn't plant that in my head and, you know, all of a sudden I had, oh, I want to move. I mean, it was nothing like that.
Right.
You know.
You're prepared to demonstrate your psychic powers again. You've warmed up. You're ready to go. Are you, James? Mm-hmm. Very well. Oh, James. You are prepared to pay him $10,000 if he can turn the page of the telephone directory with certain controls.
That's right. Now, what I have here is particles of a white plastic, which, when given a good heavy puff of air, will, I think, rather conclusively show whether or not blowing is the method accomplished. Now, it will not, perhaps, in some way, differentiate between genuine psychic power and actual blowing, but it certainly should be very interesting indeed to see what now occurs.
James?
Ready?
This time.
How many pages?
Just one page. Once.
Like
okay.
That.
The styrofoam and the lights form electricity which pulls the page. It pulls the page down instead of freeing the pages.
All right. And what would you like to ask us to ask Randy to allow you to do or for me to do?
To either take something else, either lighter or something that is going to keep, that isn't going to form electrostatic electricity.
You mean put something else, some other material around
something
here?
Something that is not foam. Foam causes static electricity, and the light is what heats it up.
All right, Randy, is there anything else that you can put around the telephone directory?
I've heard the question, but the question is not valid because it's making an assumption which is not true. The foam does not in any way create static electricity, and Mr. Heydrich, in demonstrating that the pages were clinging together, didn't demonstrate it to my satisfaction. I think we could perhaps ask the judges for their opinion on that. I am not a scientist, so I'm not qualified to declare on it.
Judges?
Whatever static electricity exists in the styrofoam would not really affect the movement of the page or the clinging of the pages together, in my opinion.
I would add that if this is in fact psychic functioning, I don't really see why that would make a difference.
Very well.
The static is going to still be here because of the foam.
Well, it is the opinion of the judges that there is not enough static formed by the foam to be a problem. So, under the conditions agreed upon, it would seem that now you should at least try with psychic power to turn the page of the telephone directory, James.
Okay.
It's not going to turn for you?
No, it isn't.
Well, have you reached the point then when at which we can declare the demonstration terminated?
This isn't a magician's trick. I can't just come up, bang, bang, and it's over. I have to be to where I can work with something small and then big, you know, to build up my own self. So this isn't a trick. It has to be done. You know, this is just, it's power. It's mental power.
The conditions agreed upon have been fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, the comment very briefly is that I have gone through many hundreds of these tests with many hundreds of people who claim to have psychic powers. And quite frankly, it's more or less the same story every time. When a simple, direct, very uncomplicated protocol is used and the control is applied, the psychic forces don't seem to be present, if indeed they are ever present at all.
And that debunked it. Basically, his breath or his the air from his nose.
Right.
To move the paper or the pencil or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the Amazing Randy on the Johnny Carson show long ago. And he debunked. That may have been the Uri Geller show. I don't remember. It was a long time ago, and I'm getting old. I don't remember everything. You know, if you're a magician, if you've ever worked with magic, and I haven't, but...
Nor have I.
But I know that magic is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
A good magician can make you see something from a certain perspective so that it appears to be magical. I think it was Monday or Tuesday night. There's a show called America's Got Talent, The Champions.
Right,
and,
right.
And the guy that's on there, he's a close-up magician.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch this guy, I mean, he is amazing, absolutely amazing, working with cards. But it's still an illusion, but we want to believe it. Because it's fun, it's entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
We want to believe in magic. We want to believe that there are magical things out there. And I think there are. It's just that there's not as many as we would like to believe. People that truly have the magic aren't doing card tricks in Las Vegas. So those are illusionists. But the people that are truly have the ability to do things that are unusual are usually people that are quiet, reserved. They usually work their magic on helping people,
mm-hmm.
and helping people to get healthy or, you know, to improve the quality of their lives. Because they know that gift that they have comes from the energy of the universe. You know, and I've talked about that before, the energy of the universe. And the energy of the universe is very, very powerful. I mean, it's a very conscious, intelligent energy. And when we learn to channel it and control it, it's just as magical as any illusion. What do you think about that, Johnny?
Mind blown.
Jonathan has kindly agreed to put his talents to the test this evening. And before the show, we gave you the details of one person selected from that audience. So please give us your reading for that person.
Okay. Well, I don't know who I'm addressing here, but I know that the person who owns the horoscope that I've been looking at has a very unusual horoscope. This horoscope is unusual, and it suggests to me that you are a very extrovert person, unusual, larger than life, full of confidence, with a very zany sense of humor, and generally a kind of way of being different, eccentric, controversial. You will
kind of enjoy the limelight that comes from when it's revealed that it's you. You won't feel too shy or ashamed of it. And one more thing I should also say. There's something about you which is rather professorial and intellectual, and it makes me think that we're dealing with someone who's had a well-trained mind, is very speedy and alert and quick-witted.
So we're looking for someone who's controversial and professorial. Now, let's see if he or she agrees, but first, let's see by a show of hands in the audience here, how many people in the audience think this reading sounds like theirs? Let's see a show of hands. About 15, maybe a few more. Quite a few, actually. Now, let's meet our real subject of that reading. Please welcome Hugh Laurie. So tell us, Hugh, what did you make of that reading? Is it anything like you? I mean, does it apply to you?
I wouldn't say very much, no.
I watched this documentary on YouTube. I think it was originally on, like, you know, Animal Planet or some planet TV, about the creation of the universe from the data that they have, just how everything started, just how the universe started. And just, I don't know if all of this is fact or if these are theories, but the way they constructed it and everything flowed in one thing into another and evolution and things, just starting from the lowest point of matter into what the universe is now and still ever expanding. They fit 2 hours, how many billions into 2 hours? And yeah. they even acknowledge, we're going to try to put 300 quadrillion billion zillion years into 2 hours for you here. And they just go one after the other. But then they kind of explain how things happened, like the moon, how the moon formed and how, you know, the earth formed and just everything. It's just amazing. And then it goes into the first animals and evolving into others and then the dinosaurs and then asteroid boom and here we are. It's just amazing. Maybe I should post that on the website for people to take a gander at if they had a couple
minutes.
I think
that would be good, yeah. You know, in my book I talk about the kind of the makeup of the universe and that there is a physical or material part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an energy. And the energy is an intelligent, functional energy. We call it the spirit or the soul. It exists as a whole, but it also exists as individual parts, which is sometimes hard to grasp. The individual parts are what we call our spirit or our angels. You know, that's our soul. That's what connects us to the universe. And we are all connected. Well, I'm beginning to change my mind a little bit about that. I don't think we all are connected.
Why is that?
Well, I've seen too many disconnected people.
Right, right.
One of the things that we learn from being connected to the universe, the whole purpose of being is to be humanitarian, to be caring, loving, kind, giving. That things like greed and power, control of other people, are just not part of being a good spiritual being. And they actually can damage your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that it doesn't function as well. As human beings, I mean, we're here for such a short time. I mean, it's a blink of an eye. We're on this planet for a matter of seconds,
mm-hmm.
in relationship to the whole universe. This spirit energy has an entirely different timeline. So the spirit can come here, can spend a whole lifetime with you. And it's only a minuscule part of that spirit's life. But every encounter that spirit makes with living beings is advantageous to that spirit. They learn from it. People that don't listen to their spirit, that don't engage it, that don't bring it to themselves. And I'm not talking about a religious spirit. I'm talking about the universal spirit, the universal energy. When we engage that, we begin to understand that life is about living. Life is about caring. It's about building. It's about constructing positive concepts, positive ideals, positive energies that benefit everyone. When we construct a life that only benefits ourselves or a handful of people, we damage our spirit. That spirit, after it passes back out of this life, has to be healed. It can actually suffer. It can suffer pain. It can suffer discomfort. You know, it's what religious people call hell. But it's just, you know, it's just another part of that universe. You know, one of the reasons we say that evil people go to hell is because when you behave in an evil way, when you behave in a way that is not humanitarian, that is not kind and caring to your fellow man and your fellow beings, including all living things. I mean, it's not just, you know, be kind to your neighbor, it's be kind to your trees, your animals, all the things that live on this planet. You know, even the rocks and the water and everything that's here. We have to treat it with reverence. We have to understand that everything that exists on this planet, we are a part of. And everything that exists on this planet is a part of us. And it exists for a reason. And it exists to be a part of a bigger picture. It's like if one cell in your body develops cancer, that cancer can spread. Well, it's the same way with planets and people and everything. If one person, if one element of an existence develops a cancer or a negativity or an unhealthy growth, it can affect everything.
You know what they do to unhealthy growths?
They cut them out.
They cut them out. You know what the animal kingdom does to genetic abnormalities?
What do?
They destroy it. See?
I see.
See how this is supposed to work?
I see. That's how it's supposed to work.
See how this is supposed to work?
Well, are you going to, like,
you
take me out
there
and shoot me then when we're done here?
That'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you want to yell at Bill for his new age TUI or just see some of the videos we were talking about or email us and all that junk, log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.
I didn't have to tell you to do it this time or ask you or remind you.
I remember.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.